Lesson 10, number 16. Let's go ahead and begin by reading the first couple of verses, and it'll kind of lay the foundation for us. But this first verse is full of a lot of important information, so listen carefully as we read through it here. Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Korah, the son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Pelas, sons of Reuben, took men. And they arose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown, and they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, and said unto them, ye take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore, then, lift ye up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord. Now, you'd think that by this time they would have learned. That's not a real good approach. But, as I said there, look at verse number 1, especially. That tells us who we're dealing with here. It says Korah. All right, now, Korah is the guy, he was obviously the ringleader. He was the one who's regularly mentioned throughout the discourse and the problem. And even other places where it refers back to this, it mentions Korah. So Korah was the one who was really kind of in charge of all this. And he was the what tribe?
Levite.
He was a Levite. All right, now, what were the Levites?
Priests.
No, priests were Levites. The Levites weren't priests. What were the Levites? Yes. Okay. So they were the ones that were helping the priests. So Peter was right that the priests are related to that, but the priests came out of the Levites, but the Levites weren't all priests. Only the line of Aaron among the priests. All right. Now, so Korah is among the Levites. Now, the Levites were the ones, I mean, they had more responsibility and more spiritual privileges than anyone in the nation other than the priests. And yet they wanted more. Okay? Now notice here, Dathan, Abiram, and On. What tribe were they from? What tribe were they from? It says right there, sons of?
Reuben.
All right, so they were the Reubenites. All right, so here we've got some Levites and Reubenites working together. Now, the Reubenites, they were just one of the tribes. Now, Reuben, of course, was the eldest of all of the sons of Jacob, but he wasn't one of the leaders officially because he lost his privileges because of some of the sins that he did. But here, so here we have Korah, a Levite, and Dathan, Abiram, and On, Benjamites, Reubenites that were working with him. And then they rose up, and it says they had 250 princes of the assembly who were famous in the congregation. So these were renowned men, well-known men, leaders among the nation. And as we read on, we can assume, as you look down, let's just look at verse number 7. That helps us here. At the end of verse 7, the 7 says, but put ye fire therein and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow, and it shall be that the men whom the Lord doth choose, he shall be holy. Ye take too much upon you, ye sons of Levi. All right. So he's blaming the sons of Levi. So we can assume that there was a lot of the people among these 250 famous men that must have been Levites as well. All right. Now, why Dathan, Abiram, and On are put in the same category and treated like sons of Levi when it specifically says they were sons of Reuben? I'm not sure. But they were obviously working together. It wasn't just the Levites that were rebelling here. And so there's this big rebellion against Moses and against Aaron. Now, as we can picture in our minds, to think, what did Moses and Aaron typically do when that happened? They fell on their faces and started praying, because they knew. I mean, it was like a lightning rod going up, because they knew that God was going to come down with fury.
What were they rebelling against again?
They didn't like the leadership. They wanted, they said, you take too much upon you, Moses and Aaron. You're trying to tell us what to do, and you're no better than we are. And we're just, so that was the same thing that Miriam did. That's the same thing that a lot of them did. You know, you think you're better than us. And, the, and Moses had no intent of doing that at all. He was just doing what God told him to do. All right? So they were being accused of that. And so Moses and Aaron, they fall on their faces. Verse number 4. And when Moses heard it, he fell on his face. And he spake unto Korah and unto all his company, saying, even tomorrow the Lord will show who are his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near unto him, even him whom he hath chosen will he cause to come near unto him. This do, take you censers, Korah and all his company, and put fire therein, and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow. And it shall be that the man whom the Lord doth choose, he shall be holy, and ye take too much upon you, the sons of Levi. So the same thing they accused him of. They were saying, Moses, you take too much upon you. And Moses said, hang on now, it's not me. It's you that are taking too much upon you, because this isn't your job. And so he's addressing them. Now, you know, we don't, obviously, God's not giving us all the details of what's taking place here. How did Moses know what to say? How did he know that he was supposed to make this challenge to them? How did he know that he was supposed to take these, every man his censer and put fire in him? Obviously, God had been speaking with him. Right? He's been dealing, been talking to God. Maybe when he fell on his face, who knows? Verse 4 may have a lengthy period of time. He fell on his face. It might not have been he fell on his face and immediately started speaking. Well, he may have fell on his face, talked to the Lord about this, and said, Lord, what do I do? And obviously, he knew what to do. And the Lord had laid it upon his heart to have these men take censers and put fire in them. Now, let's just talk about that for a moment. All right, so we see here that they were to take these censers. And I'm not really following my notes very closely here, so that makes it a little bit confusing. But the censers, what were they? All right, what was a censer? Anybody know what a censer was? Well, yes. Yes, it was some sort of a pan or a scoop. The word can refer to a bucket, it can refer to a pan, it can refer to something, a pan that's got a long handle on it. It was something of that sort that they were made of brass, and they would put coals of fire in them, and then they put incense on that, and it would smoke, the incense would come out of it. Right? And these were used apparently in part of their worship to the Lord. Right? And so they were supposed to bring all that, and each man was supposed to bring his censer, and tomorrow we're going to set these before the Lord, and we're going to find out what God says. So Moses makes this proclamation to them that they're supposed to bring it all out, and they're supposed to deal with this. Now, in verse number 8, and Moses said unto Korah, hear, I pray you, ye sons of Levi, seemeth it but a small thing unto you that God of Israel hath separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near unto himself, to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord, and to stand before the congregation to minister to them? And he that hath brought thee near to him, and all thy brethren, the sons of Levi, with thee, and seek ye the priesthood also? For which cause doth both thou and all thy company shall gather together against the Lord, and what is Aaron that ye murmur against him? All right, so Aaron was the priest. Moses wasn't the priest. He was just working with Aaron. But Aaron was a priest, and his family was the priest. And so these men were trying to take the priesthood away from them and to get part of the priesthood as well. And so Moses is rebuking them for this, for their desire to do that. Now, we see in verse number 12, and Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and said, we will not come up. I said, Moses called them, and they said, we're not going to come up to you. We're not going to listen to you. Is it small thing that thou hast brought us up out of the land that floweth with milk and honey to kill us in this wilderness, except thou make thyself altogether the prince over us? So here they're just blaming Moses, saying, Moses, it's your fault that we left Egypt. Now remember, just several months back, over a year prior to this, they were begging God to help them in Egypt. They were desperate, because that's why God heard their cries, because they were crying. They were slaves and they were suffering and they were having a hard time, and they were saying, we need God to help us here. And God does help them, and they bring them out and they get it. But because they didn't bring them right into the land, I mean, they could have, but they rebelled against God, wouldn't believe God. And so now they ended up in the wilderness. They're wandering around in the wilderness and they're all angry at Moses, blaming Moses for all this. And it says, verse number 14, moreover, thou hast not brought us into the land that flows with milk and honey, or to give us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Wilt thou put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. All right, so they were rebelling against him and said, we don't like the situation. We don't like what you promised, and you didn't do it. You know, you said we're going to get into a good land that flows with milk and honey, and you didn't bring us into that land, and we don't want it, and we're not going to listen to you. We're not going to obey you anymore. And so they were very rebellious against Moses at this point. And Moses, then, it says, is very wroth, and he said unto the Lord, respect not their offering. I have not taken one ass from among them, from them, neither have I hurt one of them. And Moses said unto Korah, be thou and all thy company before the Lord, thou and they and Aaron tomorrow. All right, so Moses just tells the Lord, you know, that's a dangerous thing. You know, when Moses is praying against you, you know you got problems coming. And so Moses just said, Lord, don't listen to them. Don't respect their offerings here. And they, verse 17, and take every man his censer and put incense in them, and bring them before the Lord, every man his censer, 250 censers, thou also, and Aaron, each of you, his censer. And they took the every man his censer, and put fire therein, and laid them incense on them, and then stood in the door of the tabernacle of the congregation with Moses and Aaron. All right, so they brought them all to the tabernacle, they presented them before the Lord, in the tabernacle. So there's 250 plus Aarons. All right. And then Korah gathered all the congregation against them into the door of the tabernacle and of the congregation. And the glory of the Lord appeared unto all the congregation. So God reveals himself through his glory. Now, what do you think that glory, I mean, how do they know that the glory of the Lord is there? What would have been a symbol of that? Yeah, probably something of that nature. This Shekinah glory type of thing of the Lord, some kind of a bright cloud, a bright shining appearance. So they all knew that God was there. And so God appeared unto all them in the congregation. And verse 20, and the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from among the congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And again, Moses falls on his face. He says, oh, Lord, there's trouble coming now. And he falls on his face before the Lord and said, oh, God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and wilt thou be wroth with all the congregation? And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, speak unto the congregation, saying, get you up from about the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Moses rose up and went unto Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spake unto the congregation, saying, depart you from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest ye be consumed in their sins. So they got up from the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram on every side. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood in the door of their tents, and their wives and their sons and their little children. So here they're just defying Moses. All right, so they're standing there. Moses says, all right, everybody clear. Get away from these guys, because God's angry with them. God's going to bring down judgment upon them. You better clear out of their way. And the people, wisely enough, moved back and got a distance away. But Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, they all stand in their tents doors like, what is he going to do to us? You know, and they stand there with their families, all proudly standing before Moses and the congregation. In verse number 28, and Moses said, "Hereby ye shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of mine own mind. If these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord hath not sent me. But if the Lord make a new thing, and the earth open up her mouth and swallow them up with all that appertaineth unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then ye shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord." Now, you know, I wonder, was this something Moses just came up with? Or was this something God said, "Hey, listen, I'm going to open up the ground and I'm going to do this"? I don't know. I mean, it could be that Moses just said, "Lord, why don't you just do this? Open up the ground, swallow them up." I don't know what happened, but he makes a statement and that there was going to be a great earthquake and they were all going to fall down in the canyon of it and be closed in it. And then in verse number 31, and it came to pass as he had made an end of speaking. So as soon as he's done talking, all these words, that the ground clave asunder, and that was under them. And the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses and all the men that appertained to Korah and all their goods, and all that appertained to them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished from among the congregation. All right, so God did do this amazing thing. He opens up the ground, great earthquake. I mean, you think about the quaking of that. I mean, several of us have been in earthquakes, but I've never been in an earthquake so big that, you know, they split the ground wide open enough to swallow up, you know, tens of people. And then, I mean, that would be a really shaky earthquake. So everybody in the place felt this huge earthquake. They felt the earth tremor. They felt the earth open up. They saw these people falling in. They saw them land down in there, and they're screaming and hollering, and they're as the earth is closing in on them, they see all this. What an amazing thing.
I reckon of Korah's children did not perish as a result of sin.
Well, not some of them may not have, because some of them, it is recorded other places that some of them were there, but the scriptures clearly tell us here that his children were there. So maybe he had some older ones that were independent and, you know, didn't do that. But
When it says their houses, does that mean their dwelling places or their households?
Well, I think it probably has to do with both, because they were standing in the doors of their houses or their tents. So it would obviously, that they were right there in the doors of the tents when it all swallowed it down. So I think it would include the tent plus all that was in it. Garrett.
Chapter 26:11 says, "Notwithstanding the children of Korah died not."
Yes, but all I'm saying is what the scriptures say here. It says that Korah and his children were there. So some of them obviously were exempt. I'm not denying that, because you're right, the scripture does make that statement. But some of them were there, because he says right in verse 27 that he says, get away from Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And then at the end of it, it says they stood in the door of their tents with their wives and with their sons and with their little children. And then that it opened up and swallowed them up alive. So obviously some of them perished, but he must have had some children that did not perish. Gary.
Yeah, I looked once in the Psalm 46. But there's a few actually, but when it mentions the sons of Korah. And I've always thought in 46, he mentions, therefore, he says, God is our refuge and strength, very present, not in trouble. But then he says, therefore, we will not fear that the earth be removed, and that the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. And I always thought maybe that was particularly mentioned to them, because it says it's all the sons of Korah, because he was kind of reassuring them that, trust God, that's not going to happen to you.
Well, that's a possibility.
That's
a good observation.
The correlation between, because he mentions a lot about, even in the earlier chapter to them, he mentions all about our fathers and how things they told us, and he's going back to the past talking to them. Yeah. But I don't know.
There's
a significant effect on the remainder of the Israelites. I mean, they were obviously aware of this incident. So you can imagine the fear that overtook them, and their attitude in terms of discipline must have changed overnight.
You ought to wait and see, though. They're dull of hearing, right? So as we read on, right?
And Moses at this stage saying, "Anybody else?"
Yeah. And verse 34, and all Israel that were round about them fled at the cry of them, for they said, "Lest the earth swallow us up also." And there came out a fire from the Lord and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. So the Korah's gang, they went down to the hole, and then the rest of them died from a fire blast that God sent from heaven. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, "Speak unto Eleazar the son of Aaron the priest, and that he take up the censers of the burning, and scatter thou the fire yonder, for they are hallowed, and the censers of these sinners against their own souls, let them make them broad plates for the covering of the altar, for they offered them before the Lord. Therefore, they are hallowed, and they shall be a sign unto the children of Israel." All right, so these broad plates, the word there literally means something beaten flat. And so they took all these censers, and they beat them flat and made some kind of a covering to be used there in the tabernacle. So these brass things were all beaten together. Well, it all depends. I mean, it depends on how pure it was. It may have had alloy in it, or maybe they did heat it and beat it. All I know is the word literally means to beat it with, like beating it with a hammer, is the idea that the word has there, to beat it flat. And so they made these broad plates out of these censers that were there. In verse number 39, Eleazar the priest took the brass censers wherewith they burnt and had offered, and they were made broad plates and covered the altar. Verse 40, to be a memorial unto the children of Israel, that no stranger which is not of the seed of Aaron come near to offer incense before the Lord, that he be not as Korah and his company, as the Lord said to him by the hand of Moses. Now, here's for Matt, verse 41. But on the morrow, all the congregation of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, "Ye have killed the Lord, the people of the Lord." And God, all right. So they're all, they're upset with Moses again because he killed the people of the Lord. And it came to pass, when the congregation was gathered against Moses and against Aaron, that they looked toward the tabernacle of the congregation, and behold, the cloud covered it. All right, so the glory of the Lord came down again, and he's upset with them again. And Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of the congregation, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, "Get you up from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment." And he fell on their faces. All right, so God fired up at them again because they're acting up again. They're just... They didn't learn. You just picture in your mind. I mean, think of the most fearful event you've experienced in your life. I mean, that had to have been one of the most fearful things they could experience. I mean, I know that we've been through a couple of earthquakes, and they were nothing of this nature. I mean, it shook the whole house, and you wondered whether the house was going to stand, but the ground didn't open up. I mean, if the ground would open up and swallow our neighbor's house, then we'd say, "Whoa, that was an earthquake."
You mentioned the Lord appearing before them.
Yeah. So they saw that. Yeah, you're right. They saw the Shekinah glory come down. They saw that God was there. They saw that God was upset. They saw this, and then they turn against Moses again. So they're all angry at Moses. Now God says, "Just get away from him, Moses. Let me get at him. I'm going to destroy him." And Moses again, he cries to the Lord, and he immediately sends Aaron to take a censer and put fire therein, verse 46, from off the altar, and put incense on it, and go in quickly into the congregation and make an atonement for them, for there's wrath gone out from the Lord. The plague has begun. All right, so God sends now a plague unto the people because of the rebellion against him. They would not listen. Now God's sending that judgment. And again, we see that God's intervening here and defending Moses and Aaron. And verse 47, and Aaron took as Moses commanded, and he ran in the midst of the congregation, and behold, a plague was begun among the people, and put on incense and made an atonement for the people. And he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stayed. And when they had, now they that died in the plague was 14,700 beside them that died in the matter of Korah. And Aaron returned unto Moses unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the plague was stayed.
Alright? So, they ran away earlier. They saw what happened to the 250, so they all ran away. I guess they knew what they were thinking. But they weren't the ones standing up there saying it, but they were thinking it. So the next day they all sort of gather together and say, yeah, now we want a memory again.
Yeah, and so 14,700 of them die. You know, so whether they were the entirety of the complainers, or probably the ringleaders of them, maybe not the entirety of them, but Aaron was able to stop the plague in time with his offering. So once again, Moses and Aaron are intervening for the people, keeping them alive. And if Moses, you know, if Moses hadn't intervened for these people, God would have cooked them all long before they got through the wilderness. But Moses and Aaron continue to intercede for them. And, you know, there's so many things in here that we can gain from this and learn from this that can be of help to us. First of all, it's a very serious error to rebel in jealousy against spiritual leadership. All right? Now, there's times that spiritual leaders can be wrong. They're human. All right? And if that be the case, first of all, we better make sure that we have our facts right, and that we handle things biblically and not try to handle it in our own rebellious way. But these men rebelled against the leadership jealously, wanting something that they didn't have. And that was a very foolish thing for them to do. And, you know, there's all kinds of positions. You know, the best thing we can do is just allow the Lord to lead us day by day instead of wanting something more than we have. You know, it's a plague that we all are tempted with, you know, to want something better. And no matter what our position may be, we might say, well, if I just could do that, you know, why can't I do that? I want to do that. And we want something other than what God has given us. One thing that we must get from this chapter is the importance of falling on our face before the Lord when things go wrong. I don't know about you, but I need to learn that. I need to learn that. So the first thing that I do, as soon as something goes wrong, I immediately pray. Instead of trying to fix it first, and then when I can't figure out how to fix it, then, I guess I better pray. I can't fix this. You know, maybe you don't do that, but I often do. I'll try to solve the problem first, and then when I can't figure out how, then, I got to pray. But how much better it would be if we, as soon as the problem comes, we immediately pray. Stop and say, we got to pray. That's what we ought to do. That's what Moses and Aaron did. And not only for our problems, and this is something that we rarely do because we feel like it's intruding, but what was Moses and Aaron doing? They were interceding for others. They were not worried about themselves. They were worried about what God was going to do because Moses and Aaron, they weren't afraid that the people were going to take away their position. That wasn't the issue at all. Moses knew God was going to be very unhappy if they start rebelling against the leadership that God had ordained. And so they immediately start praying for the people to keep God from cooking them. And as a result, a lot of them already died. You know, you think about this, there was 250 plus all the family of Korah, except the few sons of his that did escape. That is an unusual thing, and I appreciate Joe bringing that out. We do know that the sons of Korah were still there, but why does he say that they're all here? I don't know. The only thing I can say is we don't know how old this Korah guy was. He may have been older. He may have had some grown sons. You know, in those days, a lot of them had 25 kids. Well, not quite, but you know what I mean. They, over a long period of time, and the older ones may have left home and been on their own. Maybe some of them were the ones that said, hey, we're not siding with Dad on this. That's not right. I don't know.
More sons after.
Not after they went down the hole.
Oh, yeah.
Another question arises. Will they be destroyed forever in eternity, or will it just be that death at that moment?
That's something that God knows and we don't. I don't
because,
know.
Because when you look at the passage in the New Testament about, what was the name of that man and the woman who got struck dead?
Yes, Ananias and Sapphira.
That's right. They're not going to lose their salvation, yeah. But they did lose their life.
And at the same time, I'll get yours in a second, Garen. In the book of Hebrews, it talks about many of these people in the Old Testament, particularly during the wilderness wanderings, did not enter into the rest because of their unbelief.
That's right. That's
well, so that sounds like they don't know the Lord. So, again, it's just like today. I mean, if somebody dies, they may have claimed to be a Christian, but you and I don't know. All we can do is just, you know, hope that they were. And you know, even as a pastor, you know, when you do a funeral, I mean, I've done funerals for people that I say, Lord, you know whether he was a believer or not. You know, they say they were, but you don't really know.
That's the unpardonable bit, isn't it? If you've got unbelief, how can you be saved?
Yeah, well, I mean,
if you don't believe.
Yes, if they're truly unbelievers, then they weren't saved. So, but we can't see the unbelief.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. So that's the hard part. But Garrett, your questions.
Oh, I was just saying, back in Exodus 4, whatever, I just did up the reference. It mentions three names of the sons of Korah. But then when you go to the chapter in Psalm, it says the sons of Korah. It mentions a name, I think, but it's not those names. So I'm thinking, is the term the sons of Korah just referring to their ancestry? As in, it could be grandchildren or related back to the line of Korah, almost like the same way that Jesus came from the line of David, but David's not his dad. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
The sons of.
There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things that God doesn't tell us here. They must have been. I mean, we do know from the passage that Joe brought out here that later in the book it does tell us that it talks about the sons of Korah that didn't perish in the problem of Korah. So we know that some of them survived that somehow. Right, and whether they were the exact same ones that are mentioned in the Psalms or whether that's just another guy that happens to be the name Korah. I think the commentators I looked at seemed to think it was the same Korah. But
yeah. Well, I think because they're chief musicians, in a sense, in the temple kind of thing, as in, I guess they still had some line of leadership throughout time.
That would have been Levites that were doing that kind
of
thing. So.
That's why.
Yeah, there's... It's good to do the digging and asking these kind of questions because this is what gets us thinking. All right, that's good.
Who would call the kid Korah after that?
I don't know. I didn't. All right. So then, you know, we need greater fear of God. You know, there's no question of that. We need a greater fear of God. If there was one thing that, you know, it'd be hard to narrow down one, but if I could just ask for one thing, if the Lord said, I'll give you one thing, whatever you ask for, one of the things I need more of is a greater fear of God. And another one is a greater faith. If I had greater fear of God and greater faith, I know, I said that, I'd have a hard time narrowing it down to one. But, you know, you think about these, but fearing God, these people... God tells us all these stories in the Bible to help us to fear Him. That's why we have those in there. That's why we read in Romans chapter 15, verse number 4. It says the things of the Old Testament were there for our learning so that we can gain from them. And we read that we gain faith by the things we read in the Scriptures. And then in Numbers, it says the king would learn to fear the Lord by reading the Scriptures. So it's hearing about the things of God, knowing about the things of God that gives us greater fear, and greater fear will help us to have greater faith. And so these are some things we really need. And so spending time with God is really the only way that we can improve on this. We need to spend that time with God. You know, what are some of the other ways that, you know, other applications or possibilities and principles that you might find in this. Anything else?
I think this fear and faith of God can probably only pertain to someone who is reasonably heavily involved in his Bible and has understanding. You take, for example, Muslims and Hindus and all the other who don't have that background. What fear or faith they know of the fear and faith that we have.
No.
But again, if you take the Christian who just becomes a Christian and is going down that path, he probably has to still get exposed to that point where, what is faith to him really and what's fear? I think the challenge for many people is you can be afraid of someone because he's twice your size or he's more threatening, whatever. But fear of God is, there's an abstract situation here. What develops or evolves within you that creates that fear of someone you cannot see, you don't know?
Yeah.
Other than what you understand from the
Bible. That's why I say that it's studying the Scripture is what's going to help us to fear God. And I mean, we can look at, when you know the Scriptures and you know that God is the creator of all things, the heavens declare the glory of God, the firmament shows his handiwork, that helps us to fear him in a respectful way. But a lot of it comes right from the Scriptures and just spending more time with God and getting to know God in a greater way. So, that you'll never, ever spend too much time with God. I remember years ago, some fairly new Christian said to me, "Why should I read that again? I already read that once." You need to read it a whole lot of times. He read that one chapter already. And he says, "I've already read that. Why should I read it again?"
But one form of fear, as I said here, for example, is knowing God can take me now. That's a form of fear that's there.
Yeah.
But for others who are not in that sort of mindset of a Christian, that thought process probably isn't there. It just doesn't register in the same way. He will know that someday he's going to die. That's why I can say, well, I can be gone within seconds.
Yeah.
Jesse, I think that idea of fear, there's going to be a lot of Christians in heaven that haven't done an awful lot for God.
Yep.
But that all comes to rewards and lack of rewards and things like that. Salvation is sinister. So there will be those who do a lot for God and those who do very little. They're still going to be up there.
But the thing of it is, though, is that God still commends us to draw near to him.
Absolutely.
And become all that we should be.
Absolutely.
Because, it is true. Yes, that's why you read there in Corinthians chapter 3, 1 Corinthians 3, and it talks about those who will enter heaven, so as by fire.
Yeah.
It's like the house burned down, they lost everything, they're standing outside in the snowbank in their pajamas, and that's all they got left. And it's the kind of a thing, people will get into heaven like that. But how much better it is to live for the Lord and live for his glory and enter in a way that would be honoring to him instead of just by the skin of our teeth.